The following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Hi, babes.
Hello, darling.
I'm Mel.
And I'm Susie.
And we're the hosts of Sharing My Truth podcast,
a podcast about life, love, and most importantly, the truth about sex.
The sweet, the salty, and the
dirty. Listen every Wednesdays and share your truth with us.
See you there.
Welcome to Misfits Making It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren Lojudice. Now, this is the podcast version of the comedy shows that I host around New York City and the road. The Misfit Variety Show and all the shows in the Misfit Comedy Space Capiche Club down in Little Italy. So, how's it going? What's up in your Misfit world? I just got back from DC. I got to bring the Misfit Variety Show there and had an incredible lineup of performers from DC to join us. And we got a great crowd and we were able to, it was a tough night too, because it was like the big arts festival in DC. I didn't realize was happening. And we still managed to pull people that we didn't know. And that's always a great sign. So I think that means the Misfit Variety Show is going to be going more places. It's showing legs. I'm also getting ready. I have a family wedding on Saturday. Like, love my cousin. Happy to support. Is super excited for her. However, I have some family going that, I haven't seen them in a long, long ass time. And they are like, talk about like the enemies of your misfit weirdness. Like, they were never very nice to me when I was coming out as queer. Kind of rolled their eyes a lot about like how I was living life. Some choice things are stuck in my brain that they've said to me that I practice in my imagination sitting there, like what I would say back if I could go back to that moment. So I don't know. I am nervous as F. So stay tuned about how this goes. I'm really nervous. They're going to be at this wedding, these enemies of my weirdness. And I am going to try to ignore them, I guess. Although I have a lot of things that like I want to say to them. Like, I don't know. Should I even tell you? It's just so ridiculous. There's all these things I want to say to them about, like, you know, here, I'll tell you about one. So if my uncle gives me shit, if he says something to me, I'm going to just say, because he is racist and he is homophobic. And if he always like pushes my buttons in these areas. And if he says anything to me, I think I'm just going to be like, how's that gambling habit? Say that. I know, it's mean. It's mean. He goes to OTB. Fucking loser. Anyway. Okay. So that's how I'm doing. Hopefully I won't start a big family fight on Saturday. Do you have a big family event coming up? Let us know. Because there is an opportunity to send in your Misfit crazy stories. We do Misfit melodrama episodes and you can submit those at 646-WANG-0X1. Tell us about a time when you had to face your Misfit creative enemies and how did you do it? How did you survive? Let us know. All right. So we're going to get to the interview with Richard Kimbley in just a second. But before that, I want to say a few ways you can support the podcast. You can rate and review because Misfits trust other Misfits to know what's good. You can sign up at LaurenLogi.com. We send monthly updates on what's going on, what shows and whatnot, and resources and discounts and things, and also podcast recaps. And you can also consider sponsoring a podcast. We're doing something new, perhaps unprecedented in the podcast world. We're inviting our community to help sponsor a podcast. You can sponsor one or many, and we're making it accessible for individuals to sponsor a podcast. And if you do it for someone's birthday or a celebration, we'll make the podcast in honor of you. It'll be so fun. So you can find out more about that by contacting us at through LaurenLogi.com. Just click on listen podcasts and you can email us right there. All right. So, now, onto our interview with Richard Kimbley. Richard performs and teaches all over the world as a clown performer. He's an incredible human, and I'm so excited to introduce him to you today. All right, now let's go to an interview with clown teacher and performer Richard Kimbley.
Well, hello. Thank you. Hi.
Oh, the light's amazing.
It's crinkling on my face. I guess people can't see us, so we are sitting by the most idyllic canal. This is a canal. It's a river. Is it a river? Stream?
Stream. Man-made. They call Etampes the mini Venice, don't you know?
Really?
There's quite a few of these running around, tiny streams running around with beer cans bobbing down.
It was idyllic until the beer can. Like, now, unfortunately. So we're here because Richard is my clown teacher, and we're talking, and he's lived a very cool, interesting, fun-filled, adventure-filled life. From the stalking I've done of
you. You stalked me already. I was like, wow, how do you...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could tell. I mean, like, weirdos, we could just tell when someone else is an oddball. So I was like, oh, he's probably going to be a good interview. Mm. But then I looked you up, and I was like, oh, yeah. So bicycle travel, what was that?
Bicycle travel. yeah. Jumping in, yeah. I left England about where I'm from, if you can't tell. I left England 2008 and then wanted to travel as far east as I could. And I did, overland. And when I got to China, I met two, I think, Dutch boys who were traveling on bike in the south of China. And I thought, wow, how cool. I wish I could do something like that. But I can't. In this moment of like, wait, what? Why can't I? And then it just so happened they were selling their bikes in Vietnam when they got to Vietnam. And I got there and I was like, hey, I want to buy one of your bikes. I was traveling by myself. Didn't know much about bikes or traveling on bike, but thought, hey, let's give it a go. And then bought a bike. And as I bought the bike, I bumped into a German guy, Johnny, was his name. And he said, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I just bought this bike. I'm gonna cycle down Vietnam. And he was like, cool, can I come? And I was like, yeah, they've got another bike. You can buy another bike. And then he bought another bike. And we traveled for about a month together. And then he had to leave. And I carried on for another 2 months. And my bike fell apart. And then months later, when I was on the way back to, on the way back west, I was traveling through Central Asia, through the stands, through Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan. I was in Kazakhstan and I met another guy who was cycling a bike and I was instantly drawn. I was like, oh, bike. Oh, I want to travel on bike again because it was so beautiful. And he was making his way from Australia to Denmark for the climate change negotiations of 2009. Yeah. And I then bought the next bike I could, which was in Georgia, and then cycled with him for 5 months. And on that trip, met some other people doing another project on bikes, but they were building their own bikes, lots of funky circusy bikes. And they were doing a trip going from Germany to, the plan was Germany to Mongolia, doing social circus with people. And I ended up going and joining them. And then for many years after, I was cycling a lot and doing a lot of cycling projects.
Is that where you discovered clown and circus performance?
Yeah. From this last group, I joined them. And I knew I self-learned a bit of circus when I was living in the UK, but I didn't really know anyone.
What does that mean, self-learned?
Self-taught.
I know what that means.
I taught myself to juggle.
Okay.
I got three balls and I tried and then could juggle. I learned a bit of contact juggling, which is this with a glass ball. Because I love the movie The Labyrinth.
Yes.
And in that, David Bowie's character is contact juggling. I learned that. And yeah, some little bits and bits, but I never knew anyone to really dive in. And I met this group and suddenly I knew a lot of people who were doing circus and I started learning more. And one guy did a clown workshop for us, a rebel army clown workshop. So this kind of anarchist clown movement. That kind of goes to demonstrations to the idea being, or what I took from it, the idea being of to be in between the protesters and the police and kind of reflect a lot what's happening, but kind of keep a cool space also and stop police beating the shit out of protesters and stop protesters beating the shit out of,
So like a peacekeeping bicycle mission.
I mean, we didn't do so much. He gave a workshop in that and that was kind of my first discovery of clown. And then I fell in love with clown.
Another wheel thing, but there was a bicycle before that came through exactly as you were talking about, like getting into like. Cool. Look at that. Awesome. That's not a horse and buggy coming through the idyllic town. It was a wheelchair. That's awesome.
Yeah, so bicycle for a long time was the very my preferred means of travel. Also meant my life was very cheap. My accommodation was mainly camping or couches, and my travel was bike. So food was the main concern, and that was maintained through street performing and performing with a group as well.
So did you have one of those things that attached to the back of your bike?
No, I didn't. I had panniers. Is that what it is in English as well? I'm not sure. In German, anyway. Bike bags that fit on the side of, you have special racks on the bike and then loaded. So two small bikes on the front wheel, one in the middle of the handlebars, two big bags on the back wheel.
Wow.
And then lots of stuff on top of the...
Wow. Well, you're like quads, like super ripped.
For a time they were. Before I joined the circus project with this guy I met, we were cycling a lot and quite long distances, quite fast. And then I was my legs got pretty...
I used to bike in Brooklyn a lot, and I had to buy, like, my jeans were tight. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. But then with the circus, we then were traveling a lot less because the group was quite big, and it takes a long time to leave camp. So by the time you've left camp, it's halfway through the day, and then you cycle 30 kilometers, and then it's like, oh, a lake, let's stop here. And then you stop there and play music. And so it was much more.
That's awesome.
Much more low key.
That's great. I'm so like hyper that I'm just like, wait, we're not productive enough today. I'm too American. That's the problem. I'm like, wait.
Gotta be more productive.
This is not part of walking towards our goals.
Yeah,
that's amazing. So like, do you feel like you're like, you know how everyone has sort of like a rhythm in life? Like some people are really fast, some people are slower. Do you feel like your rhythm changed because you were biking around and like...
My rhythm changed? I mean, in this time, you know, I left traveling and for sure I got in a rhythm there that was super chill because I had no time pressure.
Yeah.
I didn't have to be anywhere.
That's amazing.
For a very long time.
How long is that?
I mean, that trip from leaving England to kind of... to when I started there was 2 years I went to Asia and came back, and then until I kind of then had a house and stayed in one place, there was about another 7 years.
7 years?
But this was not all with bicycle. Then I started studying and doing other things. So in that time I came to Goliath and I studied and I went away. But in between was always doing trips and travels and other things. But the start phase, particularly these 2 years, especially because screens didn't exist in my life then.
That's so
phone,
nice.
Phones are appearing, and I had one in my bag somewhere for emergencies, but I never used it. At some point it was stolen and I never got another one. And then life became very much about, you know, going from A to B. Okay, today I'm kind of going in that direction and maybe B changed.
Yeah.
So everything somehow becomes, or was a very present time.
Do you think that made you a better clown?
Maybe a better clown.
Because you can go, like, you can change, you know? Like, you're not so intent on going A to...
Yeah, I mean, definitely the philosophy is definitely matching. I think it allowed me, in that time where I was discovering clown, it allowed me to sink into it without needing to do, you know, I was pretty free to be like, oh, this is clown all the fucking time. Sorry, swearing. It's just clown all the time.
Yeah, I'm from New York. You could definitely swear.
Okay. when I discovered clowning, it was very much, I was playing constantly and had some friends and we would just go on the street and mess around.
Wow.
Very unstructured, unskilled clown. You know, we were playing for ourselves.
Yeah. Did you ever have a heckler?
Yeah, for sure. But I didn't care in that time. It was like, you can heckle all you want. I'm just in a bubble of joy and play, digging in the dirt, just in a state of presence with the world around, which is super fun for a time. And at some point I was like, wait, what? Especially when, you know, we start to do shows and then audiences, and then I started to be a bit confused by what this clown was, which then led me to look for studying.
And then when did you come to Goliath? When was that?
Well, at that point, then I went to Spain and did an intensive clown course there, which I learned the beauty of education for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
I studied illustration in university.
Right.
Before I traveled and.
Yeah.
So I was educated, and because that's what you do and whatever. And I enjoyed it, and then did this clown course and I was like, wow, learning is really, really fun. Wow, how cool for me and the world. And I was like, wow, I need more of this learning. I didn't necessarily, I mean, I was running around and performing and doing these projects, but there wasn't a necessary goal of, I want to be an actor. It was this like, wow, this feels really good to do this for my growth. And then after that, I then started hunting. After that, I was like, well, I need this full time for now. I started looking for schools which eventually circled around to Golia here. Yeah, and I bumped into a few people that have been there. Once I knew the name, you know, then you kind of,
yeah,
just like the universe drops people in that have been there.
Yeah.
And yeah, and they all said the same. There was like, yeah, it's really, I asked how it was for them. And they were like, yeah, really challenging. And yeah, changed my life. And I was like, wow, cool. And I asked the next person. They pretty much said the same thing. Everyone I asked, yeah, really challenging and really changed my life. I was like, great.
And you're there. And then how long did it take? So you were like your first clown class, Gaulier, and then you started performing with circuses, right?
After Gaulier.
Yeah. I mean, like how long did it take you? So you're like biking around, you're like going, jumping in lakes, biking around, digging in dirt for audiences, juggling because you taught yourself.
Feral traveling.
Sleeping in a tent. And then you go to Spain, then you go to France, and then like, how long did it take to start performing professionally?
Yeah, the word professional, what do you mean by professional?
I guess, well, you know, because like, what does that mean? I guess I want to say like with a company that might pay you upfront instead of just relying on passing the hat. Yeah.
Yes. Well, is this true? Yeah, I've never worked for anyone.
Oh, wow. But you do perform it.
But I perform at festivals, so I get paid.
Yes.
It was at the time of Gaulier, then there was a switch of, oh, I like this and want to do this.
Yes.
And then with one friend who was also from a biking.
Yeah.
Just before Gaulier, we did a biking trip for 2 months, I think, kind of in Russia with a big group. And there was one guy who I had a lot of fun performing with.
Yeah.
Yuri. His name, a acrobat from Kyrgyzstan, living in Germany, and we had a lot of fun together. Really fun complicity together.
Yeah,
and then we were in a big group of like 15 hippies doing a show, and I remember this time I was like, hey guys, let's get like show clothes, or let's like really work on the show. Or let's step it up a little. Everyone was like, yeah, and their show clothes would be, I don't know, a sweaty pair of shorts that they were cycling in. Yeah. And I was always a bit like, ah. Oh. No, it wasn't my suit that I packed especially. Yeah. And this one guy had was like, yeah, no, I'd like to work on work on an actual show.
Yeah.
To really put some effort in. And then the year after, then we did a trip together for 3 months on bikes through the Alps.
Sounds like a fucking nightmare. Yeah. Going up like in a bike on the Alps.
And we were both musicians. He's a guitar player and I was playing uke mainly. I picked up the uke because it fits on the back of a bike very, very nicely. And then we took two ukuleles because they fit so nicely on a bike. And we traveled for 3 months and we started working on the show. And we've been playing that show. So we've been playing that show for 10 years now.
Oh. Wow.
So it was through that show, which started on the street passing the hat, but then we got into festival circuits and street theater festival circuits and then indoor circuits. And it's a variety show. It's a music acrobatic comedy show called Barada Street.
Ah, I saw the trailer.
We kind of upgraded that, got costumes, got everything amplified so we could play big crowds and play festivals. And then we played every summer. We did a tour. I think just before, I'd say 2018 was probably the year we played the most. And after that was it like, oh, I don't want to play. It's also exhaust. Then the travel goes from having all the time in the world from, you know, going A to B to being like, okay, now we need to go here. Now we need to go there. Now we need to go here.
Yeah. And were you biking to different destinations?
No. Then the bike melted out.
Yep.
Because the wish for play took over. So then we were normally with trains and public transport, but flying when necessary. Yeah, and that show took us quite a few around most of Europe and a bit further. Went to Canada and Japan.
Oh, wow.
Got invited around the place. And at some point was time for it to... Okay, I'd also like to have a bit more time for other things.
Yeah.
And a relationship with other people other than Yuri.
Yeah.
We spent so much time together, which is beautiful. And my girlfriend, I also like to spend time with my girlfriend who's sitting at home. And
yeah.
So then the last years we still play it, but we play a bit less.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Still exists.
So, and then how long was it from Gaulier to that? Like
We did that 3 month trip in between the first and the second year.
Oh, wow.
So it started. So we had 3 years where we were playing just a little bit here and there and a bit more street and passing. And then we started getting in festivals and then it went quite fast.
That's cool. And then when did the Male Idiot show?
The Male Idiot. So that's jumping ahead quite a bit. But the...
Well, if there's anything in between you want to share about your Misfit journey.
Yeah, at... There was Goliath, then Goliath finished. Yeah, and I was trying to work out how to... about being based somewhere. And was looking around a bit. And there was... I was with a girl who... I was together with a girl I met here at Goliath. Yeah, and we were looking how... She was from Australia. But we were looking how to exist together.
Yeah.
And for whatever reasons, this fell apart. And it was quite clear, you know, I'd just been touring for 2 years with a fringe show as well, this Plague of Idiots, which are people I met from Goliath.
Oh, yeah, I saw a piece of that. Yeah, the few of them you have on your YouTube.
Yeah. So we went to Australia and England, and we toured for 2 years. Well, they carried on a bit after I left. And I was quite sure I didn't want to fall into this fringe circuit of just playing all the time and having no home. And then my relationship fell apart, and then a friend from the cycling circus was like, hey, we just found a piece of land. And I was like, I'm in. And then I moved to Germany, just south of Berlin. And we bought a piece of land with about 10 people, some from this community of cycling circusy people and some not.
Yeah.
Kind of linked to that in other reasons. And then we bought a piece of land and then built up a kind of living project community space.
A commune?
A commune that I was living at for 6 years until last year. And then I relocated to Austria, where my girlfriend is at now.
Ah.
And then in this commune time...
commune. I love it. Yeah, it all tracks, though, to me. It all makes 100% sense.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to go from, like, bicycle person to, like, bicycle traveler to, like, I don't know, finance guy.
Yeah. No. Yeah, very much not. So, yeah, I was living in this commune and then working quite a lot on what you have to in group living. A lot of...
Yeah.
Emotional miteinander. Where a lot of
emotional dynamics.
Emotional dynamics, group dynamics, communication.
Menage, that's so intense.
All these kind of things, which is wonderfully intense. I love it. I have such a love for that. All the other work in the community, I was like, we've got to do this, build this. I was all like,
so did you lead like workshops with them, movement workshops to get to team build? Because you're so good at team building in your movement class.
Yeah, I did. I took on very much that role of group builder. And we'd have a lot of guests coming in to help us build. So I always did things with the big groups to animate and bring people together. It was also kind of my role. And that and the emotional in-between, let's call it, I really fell in love with or got deeper. I really love that work and appreciate and. Very necessary for me at that moment of my life as well to learn. And with that came many themes. Also, I had a little men's group just for men as well to exchange about growing up as a man, being a man, and the themes that come with this. So these themes were present in me. And at some point in a clown workshop I gave somewhere in France, invited by a little organization, I met a guy called Tilo. And that was 2016 we met. And he was like, hey, we should do something together. He's a therapist, gestalt therapist, and runs different workshops specifically for men. He works a lot with men.
What's a gestalt therapist?
Gestalt therapist is a form developed by a man called Fritz Perls. Not sure how to pronounce his name. And it's a form of therapy. I think the best way described is it's very focused on the now. So we're not looking in past. It's like, what are you feeling now? Like, literally, and where do you feel it in your body? And that it's everything, it's okay to be there. Like everything is, it's very present. And what, Gestalt means form in German. So what is the form now? What are you taking on right now? Let's talk about very present. So it's very much bringing people back to to what is actually happening. And of course, there's many things that is masking for themselves what is actually happening.
Yeah.
And he's based in this. Yeah. And at some point, quite a few years later, we got the time to create a workshop. Which is kind of a combination of, the idea was a combination of self-growth for men through clown. Also through doing clown work, noticing how the personal comes very important and very close for people. Like so often in workshops being like, wow, okay, we work, and there's the block where the person is now. And there's so much about fear, about vulnerability, about shame, about all these failure. We're like, wow, this would be very good for men.
Yeah.
These are great themes for men to explore. And then we developed a workshop called The Male Idiot. I generally use the word idiot in my workshops more than clown. I kind of fell in love with it in a beautiful way. Beautiful idiot. Inspired by Goliath very much. Yeah. And then we started doing it. And that was quite a few years ago now, about 5 years ago we started that. And it's very inspired by, I mean, initiated by Goliath and the love of clown, but also by a man, Giovanni Fusetti, who's a teacher in, mm-hmm. in Italy.
Yeah. Some people have been talking about him.
Yeah. Highly recommended. Who's also based in, he was Lecoq's student and taught at Lecoq after, mm-hmm. and is based in a lot of therapies, gestalt therapy and process-orientated psychology and Jungian archetypical things.
That's cool.
And I worked with him a lot and learned a lot from him, a lot of somatic approaches of working with clown as well.
Your lucid body technique uses that Jungian well. It's pretty, it's pretty similar in a way.
Yeah, and this somatic way of somatic techniques, which are kind of inspired by the root of Wilhelm Reich, which is a bioenergetic. And in this therapy, they would say what's not expressed is impressed in the body.
Uh-huh.
Which I learned from Giovanni, what's not expressed is impressed in the body. So we all have a somatic form that is directly related to our experience.
Yeah, trauma is like trapped in the body. Yeah, there's been a lot. Yeah, on that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then with the male idiot, then we work through somatic approach as well, but specifically related to the talking about masculinity.
Yeah.
Okay, what is in the body that's connected to your relationship with masculinity?
Yeah.
With your surroundings you grew up with, the other men in your life, with what you thought you should be, must be.
Yeah,
and then having fun with that, amplifying these somatics, making amplified characters, putting them into play, having fun, and then reflecting it. It's super fun, super touching.
And how do you get them to come take your class?
That's the tricky thing.
Yeah, because it's like the men are like, I got no problem, it's good, everything's great.
Yeah. I'm thinking about changing the title to The Wonderful Amazing Male.
Yeah.
We get more people for the workshop.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, normally the workshop is 10 people is kind of what we head for, plus us, so it's a relatively intimate workshop. And normally people who come are already on a journey of reflecting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then word of mouth is normally there.
Yeah. I think it's like if you just say, like, how to pick up more chicks or something like that, you need to get those douches need to take your class.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, often, yeah. and they're not quite ready maybe to take the class, or not. I'm not sure. I haven't quite done it with that circle. And that's also an interest I have now, to how to open this workshop up to other circles as well, how to work in other fields, or how the workshop would need to be adapted, or like I'd love to work in prisons with it. It's a little thing that comes, which is way out of my comfort zone of mainly working in mm-hmm. my bubble of humans.
Yeah. Calling it the male idiot might work there, because then it would be very self-selecting to the people who would like be open to be called an idiot, because maybe calling someone an idiot in prison who doesn't want to be called an idiot is higher stakes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and the name is right. It's somehow, it relies a little bit on people understanding it's a little bit, there's something fun in idiocy as well. Which is tricky in the, I think the title at the moment is seems more for us at the moment than for.
Yeah. It's what is Oprah's like, sell them what they want, give them what they need.
Yeah.
Sort of infiltrate. Yeah. Infiltrate. Have you ever met a man who is beyond help?
Met a man who is
beyond help. Have you met? It's like I can't even workshop you, dude. I know a few.
That's a funny one. I mean, I think it would go back to this point of readiness.
Yeah.
I met many men who aren't ready to receive feedback.
Yeah.
Or they're not ready to see what everyone else is seeing.
Yeah.
Which is this, you know, it comes up strong, and especially when you're working somatically, because it's not, we're not making anything up. We observe and analyze and be like, there's something, I don't know, there's something in the body here, in the space, that's very dominating, let's say. And it's reflected, and they're encouraged to amplify this. And, you know, there's often a lot of resistance to this process of, no, I'm not that.
Yeah.
Fear. And beyond help. I don't know. I don't think I agree with that, that's you know, forever. But for sure, met many men who are not ready, willing to be reflected in that moment.
Yeah.
And have a lot of masks coming very strong to protect something.
Mm. In a lot of my bits, I emasculate men, and it's so easy. I'm always blown away about how easy it is.
How do you emasculate men?
One example is I play an IVF syringe, and I'm like, yeah, I'm an IVF syringe. Tell me, I've been out of the game, maybe. Like, what are they going to put in my plunger? And I just start asking the men what they're putting in there and how do we get that? They're like, it's sperm. Like, how do we get sperm? And I ask them to describe their body and describe the process. And they are so awkward. It's amazing to watch because the women love it because they usually use that against us.
Yes.
Their body and their process. And instead, when a woman is asking them to come forward in a public space and declare it,
yes.
They are on my terms and my game. They freak out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm freaking out a little bit. I'm a little bit scared you're about to ask me questions. No, because it is. I mean, so much of the game that we've learned in our say, patriarchal structure society is to I mean, and this is one of the main cause of the male idiot, a clown state will be to understand very little and to feel a lot. I don't need to understand the world, I'm affected by it, and I feel and I live through emotion and body, and that's kind of the state that you train, a non-mind state. And a basic man state that we've learned is to understand a lot and feel very little. And it's like, wow, these have a lot to learn from each other. And exactly what you described there is you're being like, hey, men, okay, let's poke at this understanding everything thing.
Mm-hmm.
And bring men into shit. I don't. Yeah, and this panic is a shit. I'm ashamed. I don't really know how to answer. There's a hell of a lot of shame there. And men so good in putting these masks of being, well, all right, let me explain this to you, love. Okay, you know, we men stereotypically or archetypically dominate space with that kind of understanding and feeling less.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, let's not get carried. Hold ourselves a bit rational here. Let's understand it. Let's go forward.
Yeah.
And to poke that or then to look behind that. Seeing this as masks, which we do in The Male Idiot, and shame, that masks are built to hide shame of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly what you play with, which is wonderfully awkward and terrifying. and for sure, the women love it because there's a lot of dominance of those.
Right. Unfortunately in a subway, I was flashed once, and I was like, you know what? I bet if I would have been like, show that to me again. Look, everyone, look at his fucking, he would have ran away and been very scared because they's trying to use it over, like, it's like the power dynamic.
Yeah.
If it's on their terms, it's cool. But if I turn it around, they freak out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Men are a wondrous, wondrous and very wounded.
Yeah.
I mean, aren't we all? But
right.
I've mainly been working with men the past time.
Right. Well, someone needs to do something.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
So what is we talk about moments when you were kind of realized, your misfit moment when you were just the traditional world is just not going to happen. It could be at any age or any time.
When you say that, I mean, the first thing I think of is So I finished university illustration in England, and I lived for 2 years with my girlfriend at the time. There's a lot of girlfriends at the time, isn't it? I mean, such defining moments of life, intimate partners. I lived with my girlfriend at the time, and I had a full-time job working in an art gallery,
because
that's what you need to do. And my creativity was kind of going down because I didn't have time, so I was drawing less. I'm tired because I was working full-time, and so I come back. I mean, the normal, vast majority of the population, and just notice this very distinctive, wow, is this it? That's what it is. Which from my family side is yes, that's it. And my father would be like, yes, that's it. And that's what you do. And you work hard at your job, and then you'll be, promoted. And that's your thing. And a very distinct, is that it? And then was inspired to, it's like, I need to go traveling for whatever reason.
No.
I thought just for a year, because that's what you do. You go for a year, you come back, and then you continue
right. work. In Europe, in England, not in the United States. That's insane.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
They're like, you just work all the time, and that's it, then you die.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, in Europe and England, we have the gap year. Because, you know, you've got to have a bit of fun when you're young, and you go off for a year, and then you come back, and then you do
fuck
that.
All, yeah.
And I did that, and then when I was away, I realized it's like, wow, I don't want to go back or need to go back, or my life is much more vital when I follow what I'm enjoying.
Oh, it's happening.
Sorry, I thought it might be my old landlady. It's not.
You paid your rent.
Yeah, and that was quite a distinctive, like, wow, is this, like, real question mark on, I mean, then I was in England, I didn't have left so much. I was like, wow, is this it, England? Is this what it is? I remember speaking to my dad and him, yeah, I was like, I told him I was going traveling and saving up and, yeah, and he, and I remember him saying like, wow, I don't understand why you do that. You know, I was doing well in my job. You're doing well in your job. Then I don't understand that thing. Now he understands after he saw that, yeah, my life became much richer in me doing that. Right. Yeah. That's what I feel from him. Yeah. That was quite a defining moment of this. And another one was for sure meeting this by, I mean, it was a huge string of events, but specifically this cycling circus people who were like very independent artists, musicians, then that kind of opened up a very big world that I'm still very much connected to now. It very much holds my, yeah, a lot of my life.
Do you think you'd ever say fuck it and just go back on the road, biking road?
Yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, now I'm extremely busy with work. The world of screens is very present because I'm running the business of me teaching and performing. Yeah. And I'm often pulled to that.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's get that A to B. So pleasurable. And actually at the end of this year, I'm taking a sabbatical to, I'm not sure for how long, maybe not a year, but I'm taking some time because I need that refresh of, to get away from all those shiny screen things and all of that.
What are you going to do?
I'm really not sure. I need to work out home a bit better. I relocated a year ago to live close to my girlfriend in Austria. And since I moved, I've mainly been on the road. And so, yeah, some decisions to make on the upgrading of my work life and my structure of myself and home and work and all of that, because right now it's not sustainable. And this year was heading for, didn't quite hit it, but heading for burnout. I was like, wow, if I keep going, I'm on burnout, burnout road.
Yeah.
So I'm backpedaling. Yeah, my travel bike is sitting there kind of being like, hey, just hop on me, even for a week or something.
Is there somewhere you haven't biked yet that you want to bike?
America.
Wow. Yeah, we've run people over a lot, though. I don't know. I fear for you a little bit. Maybe in a...
I always have my eye on... I'm not sure I would take 2 years out now, but there's a kind of Alaska to Argentina. There's a lot of people who do this route. It's quite an amazing... It takes about 2 years or so.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. So I guess just cycle fast past the United States. Faster than
the nature. I'm very cool to the nature of the States. Maybe it's my Hollywood upbringing of just watching movies of these landscapes and archetypes, cowboys and things. And I think there's part of me hoping to be lost in a Western. But yeah, I want to go and explore the States a bit.
It is very cool. It's just, it's tough. It's a tough place for biking. I actually used to bike around the city, and then I went to my friend's fundraiser for traumatic brain injury, and I was like, oh, I think I'm not going to bike in the city again. But I guess you wouldn't bike in the city. You'd be on, country roads.
In the desert.
Fuck that, man. That's where they hang out. What is a... Do you have, like a piece of... Yeah, those are ducks, by the way. They're chiming in. They're like, yes, I want to go on a bike trip.
Wow.
Do you have anything that you like a misfit inspiration, if we should say, that keeps you inspired when you're like, fuck, should I just do what everyone else does when you're in a low?
I mean, very much inspired by Dolier maybe as well, but just this following of this spark of pleasure is, what I try to have in from my experience, I followed what I loved, and now I'm paid quite well for doing what I I love. Like, people are magnetized to people who are doing things they love.
Yeah.
This is one thing I always had trapped. And now I'm also, you know, I'm heading to take a sabbatical because it's all...
Yeah.
Because I'm burning out from...
So is it biking that's your thing? Because it could be also an activity. It could be like a... It could be like a quote, or it could be like a movie or a book.
I mean, the thing... You know, it took me a long time to start traveling. And I think a very big thing is that people, as much as we get scared by media and all of this, people are generally very beautiful and are generally looking for connection. And I had so many beautiful experiences arriving in places where people were like, don't go there. These people are assholes. You won't like, which is just neighboring country, blah, blah, blah. And you go and everyone's like, hey, welcome. And people just coming and giving me gifts for no reason other than I was there. And I made so many beautiful experiences and had this real sense of, wow, people are glorious. Of course, there's a lot of confused people who are not. But generally, if you're aware enough, you don't hang out with those people so much.
Yeah.
You kind of, you feel them close by and then you make your excuses and you leave.
Voila.
Hopefully. And of course, there's always chances that these people are also persistent and don't leave you alone. But yeah, but that was a huge thing of, wow, there's so much fear about starting to do something or to go travel or to go off by myself somewhere or this or that. And so much fear. But it's, as soon as you start, it's,
yeah,
and find so eyes and a smile. People, there's so many people willing to help and support. And to,
yeah.
And to be,
that's super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
let's get traveling.
Yeah, let's get
it's really making me want to go. I'm not going to come in tomorrow.
I have some questions from the students. I asked a few people just...
You have questions from the students?
You know what? By the way, I was reading your website, and I always say, like, you know, I feel like I just want to, like, use comedy. Like, my mission in life is to use comedy to, like, open hearts and minds of audiences. And, like, you... I'm just like, you just do that. Like, that... Like, you literally... I feel like you're just doing that on such an intense level. Meaning so much. Like, all the time. And that's so fucking cool.
Yeah. And yeah, this is also a day, this often comes across when I meet people or people meet me or hear a bit about me. It's like, wow, you're just, I'm not saying you say this, but it just inspired me of that. But people are like, wow, you're just having fun all the time. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, no, I'm not. Fucking life is hard and up and down. And I work as a clown, and the more I work on the clown on stage, the more also off stage, there's a roller coaster that comes with it.
Yeah.
Which also now is a huge, I'm missing a word, negotiation, is that a word? With these energies. But yeah, having fun and inspiring people all the time is, I try to as much as I can.
Yeah.
And it's not sustainable.
We
see this so much with, I mean, amazing geniuses like Robin Williams and such, who was very much inspired people constantly.
Yeah.
And such a sad story. Behind it.
It's a lot. Yeah, to do that kind of open work requires a lot of prep and, you know, just continue. And then life puts more shit on you and you got to excavate. And then, also there's the deeper trauma excavation. And it's just, like, a lot.
Yeah, this open work, it's a good phrase for it. This open work is...
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to find good balances with it.
Yeah.
Which also, from the start with Barada Street, this show, I said very clear, I only want to play summers. I don't want to play the full year round.
Hey.
Yeah, I need winter off to...
Yeah, just
and then
getting
open
yourself.
Up again.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. I feel that with, like, you know, just people are like, oh, obviously you should just do festivals all the time. And I'm like, I feel like that... Sometimes that, like, for instance, do Edinburgh and spending like $20,000 to do Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and I'm like, and also the amount of work and self-producing, and I'm like, that sounds like it would take everything from me for 2-3 weeks.
Yes.
And just making choices to not burn out.
Yeah.
Spend your last cent.
Yeah.
On making sure for So okay, fun question: how many vests do you own?
How many vests?
Yeah.
These vests?
No, the vest is the thing with, like, the buttons on it, and it's like goes under a suit technically. I've seen you in vests a bunch.
Yeah.
Walking around town.
Not so many. I think I own. Oh no! I mean, I have two for shows. Two that are specifically in shows.
Okay.
And then I have, I think, three ones that I have for kind of
five.
Like five vests.
Five vests. Okay, not bad. Respectable.
Exactly.
That's, but they're not okay. It's just, that's
never
fun.
Asked that.
Okay, someone wanted to know, were you classically trained as a dancer? Because they felt like your point was so...
No, but they asked me in the break time.
So they
ruined this this moment. No, I wasn't. No, not at all.
You were not. Okay.
No.
You just have a natural point.
I just have a natural point.
Voila. Maybe it was this different person. Yeah. Maybe just everyone's wondering. Your point is so extraordinary. Everyone's like, oh my God.
No. No, I think that came from studying, yeah, Jacques Lecoq movement and movement technique.
Cool. And I always end with a question for one of my characters.
Those are the two questions from the students.
Those are two.
How many vests do I have, and was I classically trained?
Oh, and then they wanted to know if you found a man beyond help. We already went into that.
Okay.
Yeah, and we talked about that. Cool. So a question from a character. So I'm gonna just think of a question of a character and then come up with a question. And yeah, you know, I do a bunch of characters, so I'll just come out and you can just answer there. Or if you have a character, you want to answer it in your character, that's fine too.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Okay. You look nervous.
Not sure what's about to come.
Okay. All right. All right. So, listen, my name is Queen's Marie. I'm from
Sorry,
Queens.
What's your name?
My name's Queen's Marie.
Queen's Marie?
Yes, Queen's Marie.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, so I am from Queens, New York, and yeah, I've never left. Like, I've never left Queens. Like, I left, like, I go to Florida sometimes, go to, like, Disney World, but, like, I've never left. Like, I'm sitting behind a canal, and I'm like, oh my God, there's, like, this is, like, not Disney. You know what I mean? Like, it used to be Disney. It's usually Disney. Like, that's where I go. That's why I see, like, France, you know? So anyway, have you been to Disney World?
I have. In Florida, I've been to this.
You, so that's what I've been. Did you go to Epcot?
I did.
They have all the countries.
It's true.
Like France and stuff.
Yeah.
It's so fun, right? It's like the same thing.
It's like the same thing. I was there when I was 12.
You were there when you were 12?
How often have you been?
I've been like maybe 17 times.
Nice.
It's good. It's like where we go. You know, it's like easier. Yeah. You know, just go there. Whatever. So, okay. So all the places you've been... Where do you find, because I love food, you know, I'm like, I shouldn't eat too much because like I'm on a diet, but like I love food. So like, I'm going to go somewhere. I like, it's on my like vision board to like leave the country. So I have to get my passport first of all, and then I'm going to go leave. So like, where should I go first? Of all the places you bike, like I'm not biking, I'll fly, but like, where should I go first?
Where do I think you should go?
Well, where do you think, like, is that a dig? I think that's a dig. Are you, like, dissing me on the sly?
No, I'm not on the sly. I just presume, I mean, you like Disney World so much, I just presume you have a certain style, a certain expectations that you want to fulfill. And I think for some people, I'd say China, but I don't think I'd say that for you. I don't think you'd like China.
It might be a lot for my first time out of the country.
I think it would be.
It might be a lot.
The language is very hard, very challenging.
How about the same language? England or Australia? What are we going?
England or Australia? I would send you to England. You need to go to England.
All right.
Scotland.
Scotland?
Yeah, Scotland.
Why over that in London? Why not go to London?
You can land in London and you can travel up, but you want to go to Scotland. I think it will really ground you.
Ground me, okay. What, like I'm gonna play golf or something? You're weird. Okay, anyway, so really cool. So fun. All right, so I'm gonna go to Scotland, that's it. And anyway, by the way, I think you should bring your workshop, your man workshop thing, your man idiot thing. Oh my God, I know so many man idiots, it's fucking ridiculous. But like, you should bring your man workshop to fucking Queens, because I have so many people and like I'm gonna put in it. So let's go. We'll call it like the douchebag repairment program. And that's it.
I love it. Let's do it.
All right, so we got that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being so motherfucking cool. All right, bye.
Bye. she's overwhelming for me.
I guess the queens, the overwhelming Italian chicks are, you don't bump into them when you're biking around.
I mean, occasionally, but not so often.
Super cool. Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Oh, but it's scary.
No. No, that's one of my great learning zones, people who speak a lot. Yeah, people who speak a lot.
Yeah, exploded.
To learn from that.
Fifth, yes.
Bah, 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 bah. They're dominating with the voice.
Yeah.
I mean, not that, I mean, your what was her name?
Queen's Marie.
Queen's Marie. She's also very polite and she asks questions and things, but also when she asks questions, I was kind of like, I'm unsure if there's space for me here.
Yeah, I grew up with people like that. So you just kind of, I just sort of, like, I linger in the background and you just kind of, that's the only way you could do is retreat and observe. Retreat and observe. Yeah, yeah. And then find a way to sneak in there with the one-liner if you can. But maybe not just retreat, maybe, and retreat.
Yeah, retreat. Well,
so is there anything you'd like to plug? Anything you got coming up?
What is coming up? What's coming up? Nothing I really want to plug. I just started, potentially opened up a whole new thing, but I just started a new solo show called Jimmy. That was actually Jimmy did.
Yeah, that was Jimmy.
It's also apparently from New York. a show called Jimmy that's inspired by the male idiot. After I did the workshop, I was like, oh, this is good. I need to put this on stage. Yeah. It's really fun. So then I did a whole lot of personal work and a whole lot of research and then found a bunch of characters that appeared from me. And then put them in the framework of man, masculinity. And then developed a show, which is me shape-shifting in different characters, talking to myself, intensely with the audience, which I just released, which has no more current dates, but will be wanting to play more in the future. So a plug-in for people who are like, oh, I've got something that will be cool. It's an indoor show, pretty intimate. And yeah, and it's a lot of fun. And also digging into some themes of growing up, of becoming man, of initiation, of the unsureness about what a man is or should be at the moment. And a lot of improvisation and exchange with the audience about it. And yeah, it's really fun.
Amazing. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, and so funny, you then talk so much about this retreat, what I was saying about that overwhelming talk, and like, just retreat.
Yeah.
Because that's very much this dynamic of this Jimmy is retreat. But what he has to learn is the other directions, and then meets all of these other archetypes of men.
That's interesting. I feel like Jimmy would be good on the street videos.
On the street
like videos, interviews. Yeah, like interview Jimmy interviewing people on the street.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be fun.
Yeah.
Talk to them about masculinity or
something. Yeah. I really enjoyed the show because, you know, he's on a quest to become a man that he's quite excited about because, you know, he's seen Mission Impossible and Braveheart and knows what a man is.
He's ready.
He's going to get a horse and it's going to be.
Oh, wow.
But then he's in the real world and he's on a stage with this group of people and there's no guidance really for what that is anymore or in this world. And then at some point turns to the audience and is like, hey, you got any? Look, I'm on a quest to become a man. You got any advice for me? And then waits for a response from the audience. Sorry, are you a man? You are a man. Great. And what did you do to become a man? And people, the same thing you said when poking people, stuttering and unsure. And then people say things, and it's a range of things. And often it's quite interesting and often very not. Often it's quite vague things like, oh, just be yourself. It's kind of, oh, okay. That's such a fascinating phrase, be yourself, which, I embrace in some form, but kind of like this.
Yeah, like what does it mean?
What are we talking about? Well, and actually myself, I don't want to be myself in it. I want to upgrade. I want to, I'm poking the
bear.
The audience with this.
That's amazing. How to be a man. Some of them like, you just fucking did a chick, man. Yeah.
And then having fun to improvise these scenes that people give me. It's like, you get, like people say, ridiculous. I know, stand up straight and smile. Stand up straight and smile. Okay. Well, I'll try. Step number one, standing up straight. Uh-huh. Smiling. Okay. Am I a man now? Yeah.
That's so fun. Oh, well, we look forward to it. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Very nice.
So there you have it. You can follow the podcast on my page at Lauren Logi, Lauren Logi. Updates and inside info on my email list, laurenlogi.com. Thank you to Annie McCritchian for editing, Edward Silla on Radio Misfits Podcast Network, and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast art. Thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The preceding
was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at RadioMisfits.com. Thank you.